The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. Whoa. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are back here on a Thursday afternoon, a little later than normal, but thrilled to be back here with my great friend, Stephen Fishback.
I'm always so surprised by...
The show starting?
The show starting without the theme song. Yeah, it's like a real... this is like the new era. This is the season, you know.
I think it's the new era, especially on YouTube. I think people don't want to sit around and wait for the theme. Much like most of Prestige TV, I've sort of done away with the theme song in the video. But on the podcast version, it's still there.
They brought back the theme song to great, they brought back.
You know,
great
well, you know, let's there. Wait a couple of years until like the petitions build up and then we'll bring it back. But Steven...
I love the new... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I just like would love to get to the bottom of some things. And I'm hoping that you're not going to be your usual cagey self with your answering. Okay, Steven? What are you thinking about the last night's episode?
I've got this. Reclaiming my space. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was a great episode.
That's it.
It was a fun episode. It was a very fun episode. It was a good episode. Wow. Did you get that machete just for this encounter?
Steven, no, this is my old school. This is my machete from my time in the Amazon rainforest.
Wow, where you each got a machete. That's crazy.
Where we each got a machete.
Now, is that pouch real leather? Because it looks very leathery.
It is, I guess. I mean, I think it's real leather. Hold on. Let me just see. How many machete lengths is my monitor? I think one... I actually have a one-length monitor, which is...
I do appreciate that the Survivor production designers designed everything in terms of machete lengths. Like, the fact that it was, like, a neat four machete length.
What do you think came first, the chicken or the egg? Do you think that they built the things and then said, okay, get a machete that's exactly yay big, or do you think that they had the machete and then built all of the set pieces off of the machete length?
My guess is the latter, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you've got the machetes are probably, you know, it's a standard machete length. You know, that's kind of how we measure things in my household. You know, part of this room is 8 machetes by 12 machetes. And, you know, that's kind of how they do things in Survivor.
Yeah. We'll never get to figure out what Nami had, unless next week we end up seeing Hunter run around. Like, what was going to be his challenge to unlock the box? You know, I thought it was going to be another word puzzle. A word scramble, like we saw Tiffany do.
Yeah.
But then we saw this wild scene where Jem has to measure things with a machete and do a math equation that we never saw what Randon or Hunter would have had to do.
Well, it's possible that we'll see what Hunter has to do because, you know, and when Hunter read his clue, he said, you know, if you merge, there will still be a chance for you to get your box.
Yeah. Hope it's not Survivor trivia.
Oh, boy. Oh, no. Listen, he knows it. He just can't, you know, order.
Could you have done that? Could you have done 20 logos in order?
Although Brian Corden, the great Brian Corden, commented on Twitter that the first mess up that he made, which is probably which one will get me, is Survivor Guatemala.
Yes.
I don't know. It's the one season I haven't seen.
Yeah, but you know where it is in the order of things, right?
Yeah, about.
About.
It's 11. It's 11.
I think a lot of people talk a big game. I don't know how many people, like, I think a lot of people that are saying they could have done it might have had some screw-ups.
You know, but the thing is, like, it's like 8 screw-ups, but once you get one screw-up, then you have, like, 4 screw-ups that emerge from that. So, it's not, I mean, you know, give the guy a break. It wasn't like, if you get one wrong, it's at least 2 wrong right there, you know, and often,
sometimes co-wrong. Of course, the famous season where Caleb got medevaced.
And a season where you know, that's another tricky one where like they filmed first.
Yeah,
you know,
but I don't think that, look, that if he's getting 12 seasons wrong, I don't think he even knows that Ko-Rong filmed in the real time before Second Chances.
Yeah. This is the difference between super fans and super fans. There's like the Bonu super fans and then, you know, Brandon Donlan super fans.
Did you feel like that there was Steven and JT erasure in that the Token Sheens famously the season where Tyson was so silly?
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I will say that them featuring Tyson in the Token Sheens montage, like I was happy to see Tyson. Where I got upset was they showed two guys hanging out and being friends and did not flash back to us. Like I thought it was absolutely mandatory that when there were two guys hanging out and getting along, they had to like make a reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, maybe because it was three guys hanging out. What is the parallel for three guys?
The Charlie Ben thing. And it's like right there. Charlie's kind of got like good spiky hair. Ben's Jewish. It's like right there.
Mm-hmm. Charlie is giving JT for you?
Yeah. They got like a similar hair tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So would love to talk about all this from last night. So I had the chance to talk to Jem this morning in the exit interview. And I thought that Jem came out a little hot. I thought that it was a defiant Jem this morning who...
Truly outrageous.
Truly outrageous. And yeah. I feel like that, you know, I did the exit interview. I listened to it back as I was driving home from the Blue Ridge Mountains this afternoon. And Jem, I asked her, that would you have basically have done anything different? And she was very steadfast of that this was a good move she made ultimately with rehiding the Beware advantage. It didn't work out, but you gotta have fun on Survivor.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to disagree with Jem. I mean, she was there, you know, she has a lot more context. But I do feel like there is a little bit, and I've read some of her exits and I haven't had a chance to listen to yours. But I do feel like there was a little bit of a sense of not taking any kind of responsibility for her ouster where, you know, the thing she said was she shared her sob story, which sounds like it was, you know, horrific, but that was the reason that they voted her out rather than any of like the game related stuff, like that they were worried that she would bond with other people who had sob stories or that she would, I mean, I guess that seemed to be her rationale, was that once she had shared her sob story, there was a fear that she would connect better with people who had similar traumatic life histories.
Or perhaps were, you know, that she was a big threat in the end.
But that's not what she said. Yeah. That was where my head went too. It was like, oh, you think you're like a big threat and they have to get you out now. But maybe she said that in one of the ones I did.
No, you know what? Honestly, that's what she gave me that answer also. Cause I had said to her like that I'm sure you've had a lot of time to think about this. Did you at all, like, have you theorized why Maria would not go with you? And then she mentioned about how she told her story. And I said, oh, because you'd be like a big threat at the end of the game. She said, yeah, but also that I might also want to work with the other people that had similar stories. I'm not even sure who that is at this point.
Right. Well, exactly. And so to me, that seemed more or like I was voted out because I'm a big threat, not because I, you know, potentially misplayed. And I feel like that is sort of a defensive, and maybe she's right. You know, we don't know. But, you know, I did feel like that was sort of more of a defensive posture and didn't really take any ownership for like potentially playing too hard, too fast, which, you know, again, it's an edited TV show. We don't know, but that is what other people seem to be saying. You know, we got that from Ben, we got that from Tim, we got that from Charlie. And ultimately they did decide to vote her out. I mean, one thing I was thinking was, you know, Jem's big plan was to put this idol target on Tim, you know, who allegedly she then also wants out, but like, you don't necessarily want to put, you know, convince people that the person you want out is the person who is an idol because it becomes much harder to vote that person out. And so, you know, this whole plan of, well, we're going to put three votes here and two votes there, but that means Maria has to use her extra vote, but we don't know if Ben has an extra vote. Like, you know, it becomes so much more complicated with this fear of a potential idol in play rather than, you know, hey, I have an idol. Let's just stack five votes on Ben and he's gone, you know? And I do think like one thing we've talked about is how getting overly complicated can kind of come back and bite you, or at least is unnecessary. And I did feel like that with her here.
Yeah, I really feel like that what she did with the Beware advantage, I think it was okay, but I just don't think that you can be this type of like maverick solo operator doing all of these things in the game where, like, I feel like that it takes a village or an entire tribe, I think, if you're going to try to, like, pull this one over or for some reason why maybe you want Tim to stop looking for the real idol or you're going to plant the beware advantage. But you have to bring the other people in on it in this case. And I do feel like that perhaps, and I asked Jem this, that if she would have told Maria, hey, I have the idol, I have to think that she's still there, right?
Right. Yeah. Because A, they're more scared of her playing it. And B, you know, she now has an asset that she can use as leverage for. The other thing too, is that, you know, her whole plan of like laughing and making them dig for 3 days and get like bitten up by monster ants that apparently had been fed by season 43's poop, you know, that's not something that they're going to like look fondly on.
No.
When you do reveal they have the idol, it kind of makes the idol, you know, toxic basically for Jem.
Because in a lot of ways.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When she does tell them, hey, I've got the idol, they're going to be like, what the F? You just like laughed at us while we were like killing ourselves, digging, you know, getting bitten up, you know, and even if she doesn't reveal it to tell the final tribal council, like she's going to lose votes. Like, it's just like that kind of thoughtlessness towards your fellow tribe mates, actual physical suffering is not going to serve you well.
Yeah, I you know, we talked about this, that she mentioned that maybe that part of her plan was going to be to make a fake idol at some point, but maybe you want to go like the full, like Danny in season 44 and then plant the fake idol in the ground and then lead somebody to it. But I still, my question is, but why? Just because you could doesn't mean you should.
That was Matthew though, right?
Matthew did that with Jamie, but then Danny did it with the birdcage also, where there was two times that happened in that same season. So yeah, Jem, I think she really wanted to, you know, play an exciting game that her hero was Tony. She said, I want to do things that nobody's ever done before. And she did. And so like, I respect that. I kind of feel like that the show really, I think, was in a bit of a bind. Again, this is me sort of like putting on thinking galaxy brain. I think that the show didn't really have a story for her. And I think that her story was ultimately like, hey, Jem is the kind of person who loves to have fun and she's going to plant the idol and just the glee she gets from playing the game. See, that's her story. That's Jem. But also, I think it was the reason why she lost the game. And I think that they didn't necessarily want to paint that decision in a negative light.
Right.
Because the story they were telling about her was that she's the kind of person that makes big moves and plants fake idols.
And that's what they want. They want players to do that. And, you know, it definitely, you know, in this tribe that is very much positive and vibes based, the vibe tribe, you know, that really was not a good decision because it was so much against kind of the ethos of the tribe. And I do think one of the hard things to do, and Jem sort of admitted, you know, that, you know, she was like, this was not the right tribe for me. Like, I wish I'd been on Yanu. I wish I'd been playing Full Tilt from day one. One of the hard things to do on Survivor.
She was sick of hearing about Taylor Swift. And I didn't even know you were allowed to say that.
It's hard to like play the game at the speed of your tribe, and you kind of have to a certain degree. You know, you kind of can't, like, I mean, all things come back to you, you know, one's own experience. I remember on, you know, season 31, you know, Takeo was off scrambling and making deals and blindsiding. And I was like, God, why couldn't I be there? Brian, it was like, chill. Nobody's went off by themselves. But like the way that your tribe kind of moves is something, it's like an emergent thing. And you sort of have to play within the contours of that, or you will get kind of called out in the way that Jem did by both Ben and Tim as, you know, playing too much, playing too fast. Like suddenly she's all over the place, you know, scrambling. I want to give credit. Oh, go ahead.
No, I can relate also. And the Shapira was not the type of tribe that was like wheeling and dealing. It was like, okay, you know, you're on a tribe with Boston Rob. It's like, okay, there is one person that you can have your game talk with. It is not like the kind of type of situation where, okay, let me talk to this person. Let me talk to this person. Let's talk to this person. You know, it's not every tribe is a good fit for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And it did seem, you know, with even the way that she was sort of like, you know, cornering Tim and Ben, you know, I honestly, you know, the idea that they believed Tim had the idol, I'm not totally sure I buy that, because why would he be digging so aggressively? It was like overcompensating. I mean, like, maybe in a different world, but on Survivor, like, those are precious calories. Nobody is like spending a day digging in an mm-hmm. ant farm, you know, for just to like prove that they weren't the one who did this meaningless trick.
Yeah. I would love to talk a little bit about, you know, where Maria and Charlie came from on this vote, because I just feel like that based off of what we saw in the episode, I do not believe that we have enough information to understand why they did what they did. And I just feel like that where you have a 90-minute episode, like I would hope that we would be able to, you know, understand what happened. I mean, that was sort of the promise of 90 minutes that we'll have less time that we're confused. And I don't really know the exact reasons why, but I felt like that whatever was the crucial conversation that ultimately decided this, I feel like we didn't see in the episode.
Yeah. And I mean, even like Mariah being left out of it, you know, I mean, why not bring Mariah into it? I mean, it did seem like they made a decision, you know, Charlie and Maria to like go with the guys, but by not bringing Mariah into that, they're inherently alienating Mariah down the road. And of course, like, mm-hmm. There's a place for repair there. And I think Mariah is probably, you know, a smart, reactive game player who is able to, you know, quickly rehabilitate herself into the tribe. But it just seemed kind of like an unnecessary choice to be so much like, this is our swing and we're just going to like, you're on the outs. You're not even a part of this anymore. And it did, you know, it did seem like a really big question, because the narrative that I thought we were getting was, okay, it's between Tim and Ben. They think Ben has the idol. They're putting Ben has the idol. For some reason, they thought Tim had the idol, but for some reason they were putting fewer votes on him, which like that didn't make sense either, really. Cause like, wouldn't you put more votes on the person with the idol if you want to flush the idol? Maybe they didn't want to flush the idol, but they were still going to piss the person with the idol off. Anyway, very confusing. Yeah. But you would want to see like a little more, and they still want it to be like, who's it going to be? Could be either, but we really didn't see their thinking at all. Other than Jem kind of being, scrambling and Charlie really liking Ben.
And the storyline we had gotten from Sega, you know, when they weren't the Vibe Tribe, was that it was Charlie's Angels, that it was, you know, the three women and Charlie, and Maria and Charlie are sort of in the center. And we did get that they were the swing vote, but not since episode one have we really seen Maria and Tim talking together. Now, we did have in this episode, and I've been really looking forward to talking with you about this group that got to the journey. And then basically, Stephen, I feel like that this is almost like a modern day Exile Alliance.
Could have been
formed last night.
Something that goes nowhere, you know, immediately falls apart.
Well, okay, so like what first reaction, you feel like this is something that is going to go nowhere.
I don't know. I mean, you know, we've seen this exact thing happen in so many recent seasons, you know, when like, where like the big guys get together, like we got to protect each other. And it like basically goes nowhere, right? Like didn't like Roxroy have like an alliance?
I don't think it was Roxroy. It was Brandon and Danny in season 44. I'm not sure. I think, did Roxroy ever go on a journey?
I thought Roxroy was did, a part
he,
of some,
no,
like,
he went on the journey
thing.
With Lydia and he wouldn't give her anything. He did go on a journey and he wouldn't talk to her.
And we saw
Roxroy wanted to do a guys alliance. That was
And then we saw it with I feel like Xander and like Nasir hooked up maybe about some like guys thing. I don't know. Or like, and definitely we saw it in the reward that Carolyn was on last season.
With, yeah, that was with Danny was and Brandon. That? Danny and Brandon.
Brandon. Yeah. Yes.
I think that Xander he went on the journey in episode one with Danny and I'm not sure. Was it Shan also that went on the journey? Danny hit it off
Owen
with
was on the journey. I'd be like, okay, yeah.
Danny hit it off with Xander. Yeah. But I think that then there was a thing about the people with the idols.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I mean, obviously Jonathan and Mike had a guys thing, which did endure, but like, wasn't there like a bigger kind of bro-y thing in that season too?
That was with Roxroy.
Oh, okay. That's all.
it all comes full circle. Back to Roxroy. But all right. But Steven, so these three people on the journey and they each say, okay, you bring a plus one. And I think it was unclear in the episode. Are they telling the plus one that they're in the thing?
Yeah. Well, I think so. Q told said Tiffany. Hunter said Tevin, which was accurate. Mm-hmm. Then Tim said Maria, which we have some credibility for, but you know, I believe it.
So I think that the Maria thing is where it's really fascinating. So either there's a couple things going on. Either A, are Tim and Maria actually closer than we've been led to believe? And I was talking about this last night with Kelly, that a lot of the conversation that we see about Maria and Charlie comes from Charlie's POV. Like, I don't know if we've necessarily had Maria talk about Maria. Charlie is my number one. That
Said that they're swinging, you know, that she's in the middle with him. I think
they're, in the middle. But it's
definitely more from Charlie.
It's almost like that we've been presented in the show that there's almost like no relationship at this point between Tim and Maria, where Tim seems to think that Maria is his number one. So is Maria snowing Tim? Or are we being snowed that Tim and Maria are actually a lot closer than we've been led to believe?
I'm sure with everything, it's, you know, you have this like web of relationships and you, you know, you have like seven different alliances and they all have different names or they're just like based on something. And like, just like a heartfelt conversation, you know, to some, it's like, that's like half of an alliance right there. Right. You're like, well, we had the, like, we talked about, you know, Pokemon on the beach conversation. So that's sort of something. Right. And I think that like at this phase of the game, that is just where everybody is. It's just kind of this like network of connections.
Steven, I had theorized that did Tim go back and tell Maria about this potential new exile alliance? And then is that what made Maria turn her vote around? And if so, like, shouldn't we see that?
Yeah. It is curious. You're right that like one thing that I loved about last season, 90 Minutes, was that I really felt like we did get some of that kind of strategic nitty gritty of how these people were making their choices. And this episode, I did not feel like that, where we did not feel like you kind of had that full context of what the web of relationships was like. And,
I mean, I just don't know. I feel like that there's so many things about this Jem vote that are so confusing based off of the information that we've gotten in the show. Were Jem and Mariah on the bottom the whole time?
Yeah. I bet that it was a choice. You know, I bet that they did that the girls thing plus Charlie's Angels was a real thing, you know, and then they had to, you know, you keep as many things available as possible. And then at some point when you have to choose, you choose, but you don't choose until you have to choose. I want to talk about Ben here, who what a fantastic character Ben is. I mean, first that scene you referenced where Ben is like holding the hammer because Jem has got the machete, but Ben is such an unusual character, and especially in this new era. Who is Ben like? Like, who is this like awesome, big-hearted vibes guy, you know, like who's like so chill, got a great connection with everybody, but also like within seconds instantly clocks that Jem is out to get him. But it's like, whatever. Yeah, like, I know. When you know, like, whatever. Let's get back to the, you know, like, not a big deal. Okay, I know what's going on here, you know, with my like intuitive superpowers. I truly cannot think of a contestant who he...
Brandon Donlan.
Okay, interesting choice. What about like Gabe?
Okay, Gabe-ler or Gabe Cade?
Gabe Cade from Survivor Marquesas.
Okay, that's a throwback. Gabe Cade, you know, famously didn't want to play the game. And I think that Ben definitely wants to play a
little. We did see that, like, but, I mean, you know, different.
Yeah,
you know.
But both guys wanted to, like, form the. I mean, I think the story about Gabe Cade is that he allegedly, like, really was into, like, the social experiment and really wanted to see if they could build a new society within the context of a TV game show. And like, really, once they started to play the game, then I think he got less interested and ultimately was fine with leaving. But I do think that that's a pretty good one.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with Brandon Donlan is like, he was not that centerpiece of his tribe. You know, he like brought a lot of good energy and people really liked him, but he didn't like totally transform his tribe.
Yeah, I think that had he been able to perform in the challenges, I think that maybe like that Brandon Donlan, I think, could have been like a Ben. Like, I think that he had like that kind of upside. I think that he's a glue vibes guy.
Okay. I mean, you know, that's a counterfactual, you know, and maybe like, you know, that's an interesting what if scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I think had he been able to perform in the challenges, I think that he could have, been that type of player that people like really loved in the tribe.
You know, it does feel like Ben completely transformed his tribe, you know, in a way where like brought them together, got them to really connect with each other in a way that I did not feel that with Lulu. I did not feel like Lulu was like the Vibes tribe.
They were beyond help. Right. Maybe, you know, maybe had Brandon been on a better tribe, maybe you could have seen that. Yeah. Josh in the chat says, Fabio, goofball, good vibe, smarter than you think.
That's actually an interesting comparison. I mean, like, you know, and that was a very, you know, he again, like, was not like the centerpiece of his tribe, but he was like a very big part of that group. Yeah. I mean, that was also like that tribe had plenty of toxicity, but not, you know, not really emerging from Fabio.
So going
but anyway, I guess my point is, especially in this new era of Survivor where like everybody is a game bot, you know, it's so refreshing to have someone who's just like bringing a totally different kind of energy to the game and, you know, to our screens. And I was so happy that he stayed. I was delighted.
I really thought that he was going to go. Like, I felt like this episode was like a swan song to him, and it opened with him not feeling good. I'm like, all right, here we go. And so I really believe Ben was going to be the person to go home. And that's why I've been so confused about this gem blindside ultimately based off of what we've seen.
Yeah. It did really feel like they were setting up the Ben going home thing.
Yeah. But
and then they didn't give us that much of people suspecting, you know, they said like, you know, Jem's playing too hard. She's, you know, catching us unawares. I did appreciate that they had the scene with Tim and her where Tim says like, so what did you do with the beware advantage? He's like, what beware advantage? And then afterwards, she's like, I really am a great liar. I nailed it.
She gasses herself up. She's got, you got to.
Yeah.
You got to.
What beware advantage? What's that?
Mm-hmm. Steven, so this group of three that went on the journey, that do you think this is going to work as we start to turn our attention towards Mergetory? Like, is that going to be the power structure for these next couple of votes? Is this group of six? I mean, we come in with 13, but I do think a secret six could really change things here. And I feel
that kind of what happened in season 41 at the merge, where like everyone sort of like brought in one and we were like, why didn't Drea bring in Romeo?
That's 42.
42. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that what happened in 42 where everyone like brought
just
in one?
Just as you don't need season themes. The numbers are working for them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is similar. Like, and I feel like that some people brought in more than one person, but I think there was basically like an eight that was sort of like the people that had advantages and sort of like, okay, the big players need to be looking out for each other. This seems a little bit more focused on like, okay, we're sort of like the challenge dominators and sort of the people who are a little bit more of not necessarily the people who have things, although a number of them do have things.
Right. Well, what's interesting is that we've really seen, you know, Q and Tiffany as a pair, and, you know, Kenzie is obviously connected to them, but not in the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, no one's saying like, how could Q and Tiffany leave behind Kenzie? Right. I mean, obviously, I mean, maybe the Tiffany Kenzie bond is stronger than obviously the Q Kenzie bond. And same with Hunter and Tevin, you know, there was a Soda connection for a while, but Hunter and Tevin also somewhat seemed unmoored on their tribe. And I mean, that's less true again for like Tim and Maria. And I feel like if there's a weakness to that six moving forward, it's going to be that Maria probably has a lot more connections on Sega than the other guys have with their own respective tribes.
Yeah. I mean, this group of six, I do think has a real chance to decide what goes on, but also that I feel like that there's so many big players that are not in this six. And then I think it's sort of like naive to think that, you know, Soda and Kenzie you know, even like Liz and Venus are not going to have a part to play in all this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just becomes that sort of core group. I mean, that certainly would be a powerful and kind of fun way of doing it.
Yeah. Okay. Steven,
who wins that six? Who from that six wins the game?
Tiffany is an idol.
Yeah.
Hunter does seem like that he is the person who is like, if I had to like put a chip on one of the players to win the individual immunity, I think it would be Hunter. But
your winner chip is now on Maria. Do you want to move your winner chip?
It's on Maria? Yeah. I'm not necessarily feeling like Maria is the winner. Tiffany is still feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I like Tiffany and I like Hunter now. I like Hunter. When you told me Hunter was your preseason winner pick, I was like, this guy, like he's too much obvious merge, you know, merge boot bait. Where it just seemed like he was so clearly the type of guy you voted out right at the merge. But the more I see of him, the more I think that he actually could win this thing.
Yeah. I do feel like that Q could be the type of person who ultimately sticks to this type of grouping, where I think that we've seen in the past where, okay, the threats, okay, this sounds great on paper, but, you know, inevitably they start to target each other. But I do feel like that they've seen so much of the new era and have seen so many big threats go down before their time that maybe that this could be the season where the threats stick together.
Yeah, it would be fun. Interesting. Definitely interesting to see like a new, you know, fun strategy. Rob, I need to talk to you about something that,
please,
you know, I think is maybe the big issue of the season so far, which is every time Nami wins immunity, which is every time, Jeff gives the idol to
Venus.
And we have, I mean, maybe you've talked about this in other podcasts.
No.
But there was, it seems like it's been a contentious issue on this try, where a few times like Soda tried to grab the idol from her. Like I think once she successfully did take it, another time like Venus gave it to Randon, who gave it back to Venus. Like there's a lot of like there's some sort of like tense interpersonal thing happening on that tribe with who gets to hold the idol. And A, I'm curious what you think about that. If they're like, what are the politics of that? And B, is Jeff stirring the pot by always handing it to Venus and not giving it?
Yes. So Venus gave a confessional, I think, after the second time. I think the first two times that it happened, I think it was a coincidence. And then Venus gave a confessional where she talked about that Soda keeps taking the idol out of my hands. Right. And so then I think that there must have been some kind of like production chat with Jeff. They said, Jeff, make sure you give the idol to Venus every time just to see what happens. Yeah. So I do think that Jeff is stirring the pot by doing that.
Yeah, I think so too, which is funny, you know?
Good. We love it.
Does he typically give it to the, because Venus always stands in the center. Does he typically give it to the person who's standing in the center?
Oh, I don't think there's ever been that kind of research done on that. So maybe Rob's fact checker could go back and watch all 670 some odd episodes of Survivor and see who Jeff typically gives.
You only have to watch like 30 seconds of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or maybe AI will advance to the point sometime in the next week or two where that it can go back and just watch every single episode of Survivor. And then we could just ask it, like, does Jeff typically give the idol to the person in the middle?
Yeah. The problem with AI is 50% of the time it lies to you. So it's like 50% says that, wow, that's really useful. Thank you. But then you don't know.
You just
don't know. It's like the knight that always lies and the knight that always tells the truth. And you're like, wait, which knight are you? How do you find out?
You never know. Should we be referring to the idol as the idol, or should we be referring to it as its proper name, Tiki Man?
Yeah, this episode, Tim was praying for poop to Tiki Man.
Yeah.
I was worried he was going to get bruised.
Well, yeah. Is the idol a bit of a monkey's paw? Did you pray to the Tiki Man for relief at one point? Yeah,
I prayed for too much. Exactly. You pray for poop. You're going to get poop. Wow. I knew there was something I did wrong.
Yeah. How about the name of the episode was Tiki Man. I had nothing else? That was it?
That's what I got for that.
That's what they got.
What else happened this episode? So, again, another Nami dominating challenge. How do you feel? Mike Bloom had some interesting posts about the use of slow-mo in the challenge, Rob.
Yeah.
What's your opinion on the slow-mo? Like, he had a very interesting kind of side-by-side of the use of slow-mo when this, you know, similar challenge was done in with Mott Singh in season 25. Then it was, season 41 was the next one. And then season, obviously, 40, whatever this is, 6?
This is 46, yeah.
Yeah. What is your, do you think that the slow-mo, do you like the slow-mo?
I thought it was good. I mean, I thought it was very cinematic. I really thought it was great. I mean, it would have been very funny if Q would have missed the shot where was it was in slow-mo. I think you could have seen like the agony of defeat in slow motion and that would have been great. But, you know, I do think that they love like, this is sort of like, you know, Survivor with, and Jeff talked about this on the On Fire podcast, which I listen to. I listen to it every week, but I listen to it on the ride home today. And there was a question, and Mike Bloom had an article about this where there was a question that Jeff's co-host Jay asked, Jeff, is there, after seeing all this, is there any thoughts about not having the whole rule with the flint of the give the people the flint? And Jeff said, absolutely not. He said, this is here to stay, people. Mm. Deal with it.
Deal with it. Sorry for you.
Yeah. Does it matter if people like it? No.
Yeah.
We're still doing it.
We don't make Survivor to be liked by people.
Yes, but that's not why. You know. But in all seriousness, that I do feel like that this is sort of like, and I'm trying to like come up with a non-suggestive way of describing this.
Whoa.
But I think that Survivor really likes the, I'll say, tension release that comes when the tribe that has been the loser tribe ultimately gets the win. And I feel like that for, at least if I had to suppose that for Jeff and the producers, I think that this slow-mo celebration of Yanu finally getting it makes all of the pain and suffering worthwhile.
Yeah, it was a great moment. I mean, it's a really great, and it's a really interesting point, Rob. Like I really had not thought about that from that perspective. You know, I was so like focused on their decision-making of like, you know, oh, we've got to have people suffering and all that stuff. But I think you might be right. I think you might be really onto something because it is such a big moment. I mean, Jeff himself is always interested, you know, from Live, that show he did, like Live for the moment, you know, and people like finding grace and overcoming adversity and facing great hurdles and triumphing in the face of impossible odds. Like that's
the human triumph that don't get that in an episode 5 immunity challenge, unless you had been without that thing for 11 days. And so
I got teary when that moment aired, just to see that like human relief and joy and release, like you said, you know, is like from this self-doubt and this plaguing, you know.
Yeah. And look, I don't like the rule either, but I have to say, like, you know, the hair was standing up on my arms when ultimately Yanu won, and it was a nice moment for me to watch on TV with my kids. So I guess who am I to complain?
Right.
But I don't think it's a great rule.
Yeah, it's a bad rule for the game, but it's a good, great moment.
I guess it's good for I guess it's like ultimately, like it's all building to, you know, that one triumphant moment. So what's better, you know, like the suffering that we go through, and even, you know, some of the viewers, you know, in terms of like spending all this time at Yanu, to ultimately have that, you know, triumphant moment, or, you know, to have like more of like a, you know, even keeled game.
I would rather have a more even, like I did. I mean, like obviously the Banu stuff just overwhelmed the last few episodes.
Yeah.
But you know, one tribe, it's like, it's too much. But you famously love the fire making challenge for this very reason. No, you have said in the past, you know, that you are the biggest booster. No, that you think fire making, you know, as much as it's a flawed system in the game, does produce great moments, moments often.
Yeah. I do think that, you know, while we complain about it all season, I do think that for like the 5 minutes that it's on, you know, it is probably one of the highlights of the finale night.
Yeah.
Even though
it was very tense, very interesting, you know, versus how it used to be, where it was just like, you know, forgettable boot at 6, forgettable boot at 5. And then we're, you know, down to the next thing.
Yeah. I just feel like that if you had a regular vote at the final four, I think you'd get the fire making half the time, and then you would get all of the same drama and intrigue, and it wouldn't have to get into, well, you didn't put yourself into the fire making, so like, I can't vote for you.
But this is interesting, Rob, and this is what's wrong with our culture generally these days, okay? This is not just a Survivor production issue. It's like you take that big flashy thing and you don't think about its downstream effects. You know, you like put the fire making in because it's a great couple minutes of TV. You put in like that, you take away the flint because it creates that great moment and it's like 30 seconds of TV, but you don't think how it like warps the whole game. You know, how like the fire making totally upends people's decision-making processes going back to day one as they think about who their group is and how they're going to turn on those people at the end. This is what's happening with Boeing right now in our culture. You know, it's just like,
don't tell me that they're going for the a big, like exciting moment. Don't tell me that that's what they're doing.
No, it's all about the short-term pop to their profits instead of the long-term. This is about the health of the industry in our airplanes.
You think it's all about that they're just trying to satisfy all the Paramount shareholders of like, where's our big moments.
Like, yeah, this is the hot thing right now, but like, what about the game? What about the health of the whole process?
Mm-hmm.
What about democracy, Rob? This is the problem with democracy.
Yeah. So you heard it here first, out of context. Stephen Fishback says this is the problem with democracy.
I think I've solved it. It comes down to the fire making and the machete or the flint. Yeah.
Let's take some questions from the listeners. We got questions from the chat and then questions from Facebook. Okay. Let's see. Where do we want to start? I thought that there was a good one here from LRH388. Did Maria make the right move by playing her extra vote? Okay, Steven, you know a thing or two about extra votes.
I think so. And it was interesting, as a lot of people caught, that she wrote the name in two different ways and used two different handwritings. And one, she wrote Jem in cursive.
I didn't catch that.
Oh, yeah. And then the other, she wrote, I think her full name is Jamila or Jamila. And she wrote that in like kind of like blocky print letters, which, you know, I guess disguises that she wrote both votes, which I thought was, you know, clever. It was a good mm-hmm. move. I don't think I like physically could do that. So like, good on her for doing that and just like a little extra flourish. Attention to detail. But I think it was the right call. Like, there's a lot of uncertainty and like having that extra vote just kind of.
But what was she a little bit of a target protecting on her. Against?
I mean, anything, right? You just don't know. I mean, she didn't know like if Ben had a vote or not, like mm-hmm. allegedly, right? You know, so what was it? It was two votes from Mariah and Jem.
Yeah.
And then you had
on Ben. Who's not even like a key member of her constituency from what we understand.
Right, right. And then you have Charlie, Ben, and Maria and Tim.
Yes,
all
and Ben
voting.
With no vote.
But right, so Ben
but she
didn't
votes
vote.
Twice, right.
So right. So like, you know, Maria and Tim and like, Charlie all vote for
yeah, Jem. I just don't know what like, she's worried about here. Where okay, so like let's say hypothetically, let's say like total like worst case scenario, okay? Like Charlie has betrayed her, or I don't know if she thinks that maybe like I guess that maybe like the total
Tim
worst case
not
scenario.
Have a vote.
Maybe she thought maybe was Ben lying and he has an extra vote, and then also that Tim has an extra vote, and then those four votes are going to be then put them on. She's gonna get voted out for having an extra vote.
Or I mean, maybe she's worried that Tim doesn't have a vote, you know, because he was on the journey.
Okay, so then it would be potentially a 2-2 tie between Ben and Jem, and now okay, now we'll have revote.
The other thing is, like, I think it's not a bad idea to, like, get rid of the vote when you have the chance, right? Because it just creates a little bit of, like, oh, Maria's got an extra vote. You know, I don't want to hate on me. Like, it's the utility of the extra vote versus the, like,
then why spell Jem's name two different ways?
You know, you're doing it. You might as well do it right. If you're going to play the vote, you might as well play it, you know, interestingly.
Mm-hmm. I guess so. I just feel like that was like, were you trying to trick us? Were you trying to trick Jem? Like, is it just in case Jem had the idol and played it and then she wouldn't know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
then who did
point.
You vote for, Maria? There were two votes from Ben, and I cast one.
Oh, that's interesting. So you think that she was not trying to reveal that she played the extra vote?
I guess
your point about the two spelling it two ways kind of does obscure that.
Like, I get what you're saying. If Maria wants to be like, hey, look, I got an extra vote, don't have it anymore. So when we go to the merge, like, we could tell Tevin that I don't have the extra vote anymore, so I'm not a target.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's an interesting point, though. Like, then if that's the plan, why spell it two different ways? Yeah, I don't know. Those are two contradictory ideas. I'm sure they thought it to death. Like, you know, it's like
I'm sure that Maria has a good reason. But, like, she doesn't seem like a person that's like, hey, I'm just having fun. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll find out maybe at the start of next week's episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, but I have a feeling that we're just going to go right into Mergatory.
Mm.
You know,
who's the merge boot?
Well, this is where it's going to come down to. The two
boots.
Groups of six. And then ultimately, I mean, if we could take a look at who the merge boots have been the last couple of seasons, where they tried to get rid of Caleb and ultimately they failed and went after Jay Maya. It was Josh in season 44. It was Ellie in season 43. In season 42, it was Lydia. And in season 41, it was Sydney. And what those five people have in common is that they're all people that the tribe that they went into the merge with all said, this person is expendable. And I believe they all caught votes from their former tribe that they came in. So we have to be looking at like who is at the bottom of all of these tribes.
So, I mean, it could be Kenzie, right? Like, there's a world where Q is like, Kenzie's dangerous. Everyone is like worried about Kenzie because of what Banu said. I could see Kenzie as being a mergatory.
I'm sorry, who?
Kenzie.
Kenzie is definitely on the list. I think that the people that we could look at, I think it's Kenzie, Venus is at the top of the list. It could be Mariah.
Yeah, I feel like
I think that she would be the least likely of those three.
Yeah.
Could Soda be in the mix?
Soda or even Liz? I mean, like, they're not going to stick their neck out for Liz.
Yeah, but I think that Liz is more of like a solid number. I feel like that there's probably I think I would rank them as maybe Venus 1, Kenzie 2, then big drop off to then Mariah and potentially Soda.
I mean, Kenzie has kind of that like Ellie, you know, vibe. Like, she's too dangerous. We have to get rid of her now. Yeah. You know,
where Ronnie says like, she's the mastermind.
Right. Well, that's what I think really could do her in. In which case, you know, she, if she's not on the jury, should murder Banu.
Certainly possible. Yeah. So it's really going to come down to who is left unsafe at this merge vote. So hopefully, I don't want to see any of those people go.
Yeah, those are all fun people. So I hope, what if no one's voted out next week? Let's just, you know.
What if maybe they could like break the hourglass again.
Yeah, what if they held a tribal council and no one even showed up?
That they all stayed home?
Yeah. What are you going to do now, Jeff?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that would be, you know, that Jem said, hey, can we write your name down, Jeff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're already testing the boundaries, right? Okay. Let's see. What haven't we talked about?
Questions?
Yes. I'm trying to see. Okay. This is a question from Nick. It's kind of a longer one. Okay. Going back to the premiere, there was a conversation about Jelinski quitting the sweat task. And then Jelinski claimed that Q was the first one to bring it up. Many people were saying that Jelinski was either lying or misunderstood what Q was saying. However, we've now seen Q discuss quitting in two of the next four episodes, which then he tries to walk back as strategy. It is possible that Jelinski was telling the truth and Q was the one who suggested they quit. It didn't make sense a month ago, but I'm starting to believe it more and more. What are we thinking about this? You know, it has come up a lot, but then Q says that this is part of his strategy.
I have thought the same. I actually thought, Nick, I thought the exact same thing when it happened. You know, that same series of that same logic train I kind of fall into, where Q maybe in a low moment, maybe he's like, let's just give up. But like, he doesn't mean it to himself, but it's just something he says maybe sometimes, you know, because, you know, this week he claimed it was strategy for Kenzie, but that, you know, we got a whole confessional, you know, a week or two ago about it's on me. I deserve to quit, you know. And I believe there's a world where like this is just something like a rhetorical thing he says, you know, when he's feeling low, I should just give up. And then he like
Stephen Fishbeck says it all the time.
You should give up is what I say. Like, stop doing it, Rob. You got nothing else left in the tank. No, but then he like finds the inner strength to persevere and rises above that feeling. And maybe that's just like part of his personality because we have not actually seen him quit. So there's a world where like, he's like, oh, man, what if we just give up? And then like, then he like, you know, surmounts the challenge and Jelinski's like, no, wait, you said give up. I like that idea.
Yeah. I think that he is cooking something. I mean, he's talked about for a couple episodes that he has this big plan to be able to get Kenzie out. And so I don't know. I feel like that this is part of the plan, but we did have seen him by himself also talk about potentially giving up. But I don't think that it will amount to anything. I don't think that Q is going to walk away from the game now that we're headed into the merge.
Yeah, gosh, no. And he's had food. He's had muffins.
Yeah, forget it. Forget it. But I do think that was going to be the long con of, okay, we're going to tribal council again. I don't want to be here.
It was all strategy? Like every time he mentioned quitting was like,
I think after that one time that he missed, that he felt like he cost the tribe the thing. I think that was when he did think about quitting. And maybe that was also like the eureka moment of like, oh, I could use this that I was talking about quitting to be the reason why Kenzie doesn't play her shot in the dark.
Oh, and then this time it is strategy. I buy that as like a valid, you know, explanation of it.
I just don't think I mean, it's day 12 of a 26-day game and they have fire now. I just don't think he's going to quit.
Oh, I definitely don't think he's going to quit. And I don't think he necessarily ever was going to quit. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying he might be someone who like occasionally like puts it into the universe as like creating a worst case scenario for himself to overcome. I don't know. That's just like pure speculation. And so maybe like, you know, your argument that like this is just, you know, that this time it really was strategy as a way to kind of, you know, Gull, Kenzie. I buy that too.
Okay. Brandon has a question, Stephen. Do we know what happens with Hunter's vote or lack thereof?
Can he lose a vote he doesn't have, Rob? Explain that to me. I don't understand how this vote economy
Hunter
works.
Hunter has unlimited credit with Survivor, okay?
Does he owe two votes now, though?
So he is without a vote and cannot vote. So
does he? Maybe he like votes like negatively on someone. Like the person he votes for loses a vote.
That's like an idol. That's actually like a maybe he comes into tribal council with a vote every week.
Yeah.
He is all right, we're coming into the tribal council. Hunter has one vote, everybody.
But I did think there was
the house always wins
of like you can't wager your vote when you don't have a vote to wager.
Yep. That's a great point. I think that they sort of like backed themselves into a corner with this. And I don't think that there was a way. I feel like that with Brad, I think in season 41, I think there was also some weirdness where I don't remember the order in which he lost his vote and then found the Beware advantage, or if it was vice versa. He had already found the Beware advantage, hadn't said the phrase, or all three people hadn't said the phrase. And then he also lost his vote, which then took away his ability to play the shot in the dark.
So sad.
Yes.
We lost. Brad was one of my favorites.
I know. He was a good one. All right. Yeah. Let's see. How about, you know, we get so many questions and then we talk about so many things. Okay. Stephen, a question from Daniel Sanchez. Fishback, did you ever have to dance salsa in any of your seasons? How would Coach fare?
I bet Coach is an amazing salsa dancer. I mean, he's probably danced salsa with, you know, a lost tribe of salsa dancers, if, you know, knowing him.
Yeah.
I would not have done well in the salsa.
No, me neither. I mean, I did think it was kind of an interesting scene where, you know, that there were these different partners, and then ultimately, you know, this, I thought there was, and Jeff talked about this on the official podcast, where there was like this juxtaposition of Sega being the Vibe Tribe, and then ultimately this Vibe Tribe was in ashes by the end of the episode.
Yeah. I don't know.
Which
I mean, one
you
vote
love
out
to see.
That's not, I don't know. One vote out is not going to, like, I don't think, like, you know, a lot of the build destroy those ones. And also, I mean, I think that's such a great, like, every tribe, like, should dance together. Like, I really believe this for this moment. As I'm saying it, I believe it. I won't believe it necessarily in 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. But now I believe it. That, like, by dancing together, like, you're just, like, creating physical intimacy with each other. You're
easy
overcoming
for you
that
to say that you're an accomplished dancer.
That's true. It did win the great international dance off.
Yes. I see that video of you constantly on Twitter.
The twerking video.
Yes.
But I don't think, you know, I don't suggest that every tribe twerk together, because that doesn't really accomplish the goals.
I think you're not even allowed to do that anymore.
Wow. Wow. That's sad. It's a sad day for Survivor when you can't twerk on camera. Mm-hmm. But just the idea of like something like salsa, where everybody is like physically touching each other. Everyone is like looking each other in the eye, being very like up front and close. I feel like that's like a really good way
to just
like kind of connect with each other. Yeah. I mean, like I sometimes wonder if I had like, you know, salsa'd more with Joe Anglim, like maybe everything would have been a little bit different.
In what way?
You know, we would have connected more in a way that we could have really been served us both really well. Maybe he wouldn't, you know, maybe now he wouldn't be crazy. Maybe I could have kept him on this side.
Yeah. Or maybe he would have taken you with him.
But then I would be delightfully crazy. You know, I'd be having fun.
Okay. Let's see. How about a question about Abby Quist wants to know, should second place get the immunity and a smaller reward or nothing?
I like the smaller reward.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Give him something.
Yeah, take half their flint.
Okay. This is kind of a deeper question that we got on Twitter from the Blue Spirit. Okay.
I love a deep question.
Due to the lack of swaps and the increase of the three-person journey, does the new era promote players to cross tribal lines and work with other players, or does it push people into playing more so with their day one tribes more often? What incentives do players have to flip?
So restate that.
Is Survivor trying to, in the new era, by design, is the design for players to cross tribal lines, or that are we seeing that the game is really suited for players to stick with their original tribes?
Well, they definitely want people to create cross tribal alliances. The question is like, then like,
but
does
are they
the
making a game
logistics
that is leading to that?
Right. Is the actual, I mean, like, I think we've argued pretty, you know, consistently that the game now promotes more conservative behavior. Why would the journeys, though, themselves be a part of that? Like, what's the argument that the journeys are creating, are encouraging people to stick with their original tribe?
Well, I don't think that the journeys are incentivized, but I think that the journeys are something that they're putting in there so that people can get to it, like, sort of like in lieu of a swap. Like, I think that sort of like they're trying to like have their cake and eat it too, where I think that the idea of like, okay, let's keep people in their original tribe so that we can have a payoff to the story that we're telling over the course of the pre-merge. But then let's also throw in sort of like the cross-tribal things where people are able to maybe build a bond that we could see to potentially have people want to switch up their tribes. But in season 44, season 45, we saw sort of like the dominance of the Reba Four, who ended up sticking together. We had the Tikas who stuck together, whereas, and I really feel like that the other two tribes in season 44 also were mostly trying to stick together. 43
Baka boys.
I'm sorry?
The Baka boys?
In 43, there was basically like Jesse and Cody, but really it wasn't really about tribe. So I think it's
41, like the blue tribe was, you know, pretty much, you know, mowed down the competition.
Yeah.
For the most part.
So I have to say, I don't think we've really seen one way really dominate. And it's ironic that the season that had the swap had the strongest original tribe group that stuck together.
Yeah. I mean, and it may just be generally that people are, because it's a shorter game, you're creating such tenuous bonds anyway, that like you sort of like stick with the ones you do have. You're like, I was with those people for 5 days and I've only been with you for two, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be with the people I was with for 5 days, I'm going to stick with.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like that this is going to be a season where we're going to stick to tribe lines.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. I think that I'm hopeful about that.
Yeah.
I feel like the journeys have just been sort of like a little something. Like, they haven't like created for the most part any really enduring connections. I mean, there was like Liana and Shan in season 41. That seemed to be like a big, like, maybe that is that like the strongest connection that came out of a journey?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So interestingly, the season that had the swap ended up with, you know, the Reba group sort of like reconnecting. I just wonder if that you keep these people together for long enough and they start to hate each other's guts, where maybe the Reba Four got broken up into pairs.
That's interesting.
And it's like, well, finally you're back. But they didn't have to be together for six more days.
Right. That's really interesting. And also, like, when you're together for that period of time, you're right. You like just like start, especially when it's a small tribe, you start like plotting, like, we can't let Drew run away with this thing. You know, it's day seven. He's already got the win, you know? Whereas when you're separated, like the bond between the two of you becomes tighter, because suddenly like you're a smaller group on this bigger tribe. So like you're forced more to be with each other. And then like the necessity of those other people seems more urgent too.
Okay. All right. Let me see if there's anything else that we haven't gotten into. Anything else on your mind, Steven?
No. No. I'm trying to look at my notes. Mm-hmm. No, I covered the important things.
Do we get to all your tweets?
I mean, how could you touch all of them? Mm-hmm. There's so many. Yeah.
Okay. How about...
We should talk about, like, what did you think about the montage? We did talk a little bit about the montage of, like, great past survivors. What did you enjoy that? Tyson and Boston Rob and Caleb and Debbie.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do think that they're trying to, like, insert more, like, past footage into the shows.
Yeah, it's fun. I like it. Creates a sense of the history.
Yeah. As far as some of the things that they've done on the journey, did you like this Survivor trivia as being a thing?
I liked it. Like, mix it up a little bit. I like them like doing different types of challenges. So it's not all like someone, you know, not all like one skill set that's served. The idea that it's like just purely a fan knowledge question was so great.
Yep. All right. This one from Pure Coin wants to say, based on Kelly saying last night that certain beaches have less food, do you think that this has a real impact of player success? Does playing in the second film season have disadvantages with food?
That's interesting. Yes, of course. Like so that's so much of you know, chance is where, you know, what, it's not just food either. It's also like what the beach is like, you know, how much wood is around, mm-hmm. you know, but I mean, food, I would imagine, especially on the shorter season, is like a really predominant issue.
Yeah. Steven, okay, so we got a question. You know, sometimes like the former survivors want to weigh in. Here's one that we just got, you and I, from Shane Powers, okay?
Okay.
Shane Powers writes in to say, if you don't have fire for 11 days, how do you have safe water? Anyone? Who wants to tell him?
That.
Who wants to tell him?
Yeah, they basically have like given up the ghost on this. Yeah, it's just a water well now with like filtered water. They like don't even pretend, you know. I think the change, I mean, I don't know if this was like if they ever went back, but I think the change was in season 32.
That's
you know,
why where, Caleb is a game changer.
Game changer, that's right. They were like, because he passed out basically from dehydration. I think maybe they did it prior to that, but then, you know, they definitely did not.
That sounds right to me. Yes.
In Cambodia, they were just like, yeah, like your water is fine. Like the water in the well is filtered water. Like, yes, like some debris might get in there from like surrounding trees, but it is pure water. You can drink it. Mm-hmm. Totally fine. We did have to boil our water in Tocantins.
Yeah.
But we never did. We just kind of like got water from a stream and like hoped.
We're like, oh, wow. Look at you. Yeah.
Our assumption was they're not going to like let 8 people get evacuated for Giardia, you know? So if there's a problem, they're going to stop us. So we definitely had this like,
smart,
you know, this Hunger Games moment. Like we're all going to drink at once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. We, pulled our water, out of the, Rio Negro, that the water we drank was, I would say somewhere in between, the shades of, Coca-Cola and iced tea. And
oh, that sounds good.
We boiled it and we filtered it through a t-shirt and we loved it.
Wow. Didn't that have like the bug in it that can like swim up your urethra?
But I think if you drink it, I think it's okay.
Well, yeah. Okay.
And again, Steven, there's a t-shirt. You poured it through somebody's sweaty buff. Bugs can't go through fabric.
Yum. Even better.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Steven, here we are. Can you believe it? The merge.
Can't believe it.
All right.
Ooh.
Mergetory coming up next week. So we will get into all of that, have a mergetory boot to talk about. What else is coming up for you?
You know, I'm just, they put me in carbonite as always.
Until next week.
Yeah, just freeze me in like my Han Solo position, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Fishy for this week. I think I'm going to give it to Charlie because
he got his way.
He got his way, exactly. Like the narrative. I honestly thought, like, do I give it to Ben for just being so lovable that no one wants to vote him out? But mm-hmm. I think like Charlie and Maria, the story we're being told is they are the swings of that group, and Charlie got his way. Charlie's mm-hmm. buddy stayed, and Maria's buddy left.
Yeah. Yes or no, next week, does the group of six, does the new Exile Alliance call the shot on who goes home next week?
What do you think, Rob?
I think so. I feel like that in this next stage of the game, this feels like that this has legs to me. I feel like that this is going to be a group that's going to call the next couple of shots. And I wonder maybe if then there's like some sort of like counterinsurgency that then comes up final seven.
You were so big on that with Romeo in season 42, like Romeo's rejects or whatever, you know, you were like, oh, Romeo's going to rally together the rejects. And that never happened.
To me, I feel like that's sort of like the most exciting thing that happens on the show where there's like a power structure that's in place. And then the people that are sort of like at the bottom of the power structure, take this thing and turn it on its head. And I felt like that Romeo, like it really did have such a strong preseason that I really did think very highly of him as a player. And ultimately, I guess what we have learned, and this is a theme in the new era where you get sort of like this stink of being a loser on you, and it is unshakable. Like, it's almost impossible. You could be like a nobody and then go on and win. But once you have the stink of you're a loser, you're on the bottom, none of your plans work. We've never seen anybody be able to shake it in the new era.
Why? Wait, what does that mean? Like, is that what Romeo, did Romeo have a loser stink?
I think he did. Yeah. He was seen as like, he wasn't in the group of eight. He had no power.
Marianne also was not in the group of eight, right?
She was very much connected with them through like all of her allies were in the group of eight. So she was probably more of like a nothing than mm-hmm. somebody who was like, had the stink of like in that season where Romeo, Chanel, Tori, like those were all, and those were Marianne's friends too. Right. But Marianne was, I believe, like lumped into, okay, this is a person who's at the bottom. It was just, this is a person who's more of like, not a serious customer.
Right. And Erica didn't have like, she was not at the bottom. I mean, she was
more of a nothing like a than a loser. Yeah.
Yeah.
She broke the hourglass, Steven.
Insurrectionist.
Yes. She turned the whole thing on its head.
Yeah. In the good sense of insurrectionist, not in the Trumpy sense of insurrection.
Good night, everybody.
Yeah.
See you next week. Take care. Have a good one.
Yeah.
Bye.